All right, I'd like to welcome everybody to the call today. My name is Jason Weister, and I am fortunate to have direct response copywriter and marketing consultant Ray Edwards on the line. Ray, how are you doing?
I am richly blessed, deeply loved, and highly favored. Jason, how are you?
Awesome. Right back at you.
Cool.
So Ray and I have known each other for a couple years. We haven't spoken in a while, so a lot has happened that I want to kind of use today, because Ray has done amazing things, big things, and so I really want to kind of get behind the scenes and figure out some takeaway principles that everybody on the line can use to grow their businesses. So a lot of people on the line are going to know who you are, but just for those that don't, just give us the short version of who is Ray Edwards and what do you do?
Well, I'm probably best known as a direct response copywriter. I'm a marketing consultant. I do more of that than I do a lot of client-based copywriting these days.
Yeah.
But I've been really fortunate. I used to be in radio. I did that for 25 years, and I made the transition to writing copy for online businesses and companies, and I've been able to work with people like Tony Robbins and Jack Canfield and Robert Allen, which was a special treat for me because he's the guy who wrote the Nothing Down book. I mean, come on, right. How could that not be a special treat?
Of course.
And just some stellar people, you know, Joel Kahn, Jeff Walker, and so forth. So there's probably in the internet marketing space, out of all of the good guys in internet marketing, there's probably not one of them that I haven't written copy for more than once or consulted with them on a launch.
Yeah.
And then I teach copywriting and marketing, and I'm a man who wears many hats, but I think that's more or less what you were asking.
Yeah, that's excellent. So let's start with some of those clients. I mean, in our world, it doesn't get much bigger than that. So my first question is, when you were getting started, I mean, how did those people come to you? Did you find them? Did they find you? Was it some sort of serendipity, or how did all that come about?
You know, believe it or not, hardly anybody ever asks me that question. I really give a lot of the credit to a guy. I don't know if you've heard of a guy named Mike Littman.
I know the name.
But
yeah.
I give him credit because when I originally hung out my shingle as a copywriter, it was on the Warrior Forum. And Mike Littman was the guy who responded to an offer I made. I'm embarrassed to say this now, but I was offering to write a sales letter for $750.
Yeah.
And he bought two of them. And I didn't know who he was. He's kind of a big deal in the motivational speaking world, but I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so excited about the event, the seminar that he had me write copy for, that I went to it. And when I was there, I met Armin Morin, Stephen Pierce, Ted Thomas, Matt Basic, and all of those people, except for Ted. Ted's never been a client of mine, but the rest of those names have been. And then it was all by referral.
Yeah.
It was two things. It was referral, and it was proximity, because I went to a lot of seminars the first couple of years I was doing this. And I'm telling you, people ask me, well, how do I get started if I don't have any clients yet? My answer is, go to a seminar. That's how you do it, because it's a perfect pool of prospects.
What do you think makes that so effective? I mean, in the internet world, we all want to like be in our little offices and like change the world. And the simple act of you, for everyone that doesn't know, I mean, your rise to where you got was extremely fast.
Yeah.
And you hear about it and you're like, how in the world did that happen? You can't do that sending out emails or letters, you know? So can you talk about why you think that face-to-face thing is so effective?
Yeah, and I think for service providers in particular, it's powerful, because if you think about it, for almost every service provider who's listening right now, whether you're a copywriter or a designer or an accountant or whatever the case, your perfect prospect probably looks something like this: a business person who wants to improve some aspect of their business, and they're willing to spend money to do it, and they have money to spend. So if you go to a seminar, or a workshop, who is the seminar or workshop filled with? Business people who want to improve some aspect of their business, otherwise they wouldn't be there, and who are willing and able to spend money, and they've proven it because they did it to get there. That's like the best pool of pre-qualified prospects you're ever going to find. And if you're there and you're building relationships with people while you're there, you are 10,000 miles ahead of the guy who is just sending them emails.
Yeah. So let's dig deeper into that. I think I remember, didn't it one time you put a product together about how to do this? About like how to go to a seminar and like kind of networking on steroids. So
yeah,
can you talk about, I mean, because the networking that I see that I've been a part of just kind of leaves a bad taste in my mouth, and that is clearly not what you're describing. So what happens when you show up at something like this?
Well, I am, as you might guess, I am very intentional about this process. So the product that you're talking about, I don't even sell anymore.
Yeah.
I don't really have a good reason for not selling it. Maybe I should. Note to self, sell product.
That's funny.
It was built around a three-part framework, and that is that there's a key set of activities you need to do before, during, and after any kind of seminar or workshop that you attend. And if you're intentional about them, the result can be more business. And the kind of networking that you're talking about is the, you know, the shove the business card in your face and sort of the used car salesman approach where
it's terrible.
It leaves you feeling like you got slime all over you and you got to go take a shower now.
Right.
So what I do is before the seminar, I prepare by having business cards, if it's appropriate. I don't carry a lot of business cards these days, but when I was looking for more business, I did. Even when I did that, the only reason I had business cards was so that I could get other people's business cards.
Hmm.
But the easiest way to get somebody's business card is to hand them yours. They're going to throw yours away. But I didn't throw people's business cards away. So I'll get to that in a moment. So beforehand, I had my business cards prepared. On the back side of the business card, I would put some kind of offer. If you're a service provider, the best offer you can make is for a free consultation of some kind.
Yeah.
Because then you can get people on the phone or in person, and you can serve them. And I really would in the consultation. It's not about selling them. It's about serving them, giving them some ideas, giving them some help if you can do that. And, you know, one of two things happens. Either at the end of that consultation, they are extremely grateful, but they're not going to engage you in business today. Well, you've built up goodwill, and you don't know where that'll go. Or they say, well, what would it cost to hire you?
Yeah.
Which is what happened for me about half the time.
Hmm.
So I prepare with business cards with the offer on the back. I would study who was going to be there, and not just speakers, but if I could find out who the attendees were going to be, I would study those people and decide who I wanted to meet and what I wanted to learn. I have goals for every event that I attend.
Hmm.
And usually I only have three goals because that's enough to try to accomplish in a 2 or 3 day event. And then one of my goals is always to meet and make a real connection with five key people and no more. Because I just don't think, you know, the mass approach of I'm going to meet 100 people and, quote, network with them, that just doesn't work for me. And maybe some superhuman person listening, it works for them. But so I would go with the intention of meeting five key people. So I was always on the lookout. So during the event, I would show up early. I still do this. I show up early each day. I stay late each night. I'm careful about my energy. I don't drink alcohol when I'm at these events. I'm not a teetotaler, but when I'm at an event, I'm working.
Yeah.
And I'm not drinking.
Yeah. Even though all we hear is how great the networking is at the bar or something like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, there's truth to that. My advice is it's much better if you're drinking seltzer water.
Right. Exactly.
And then, you know, I never eat meals alone when I'm at an event.
Mm-hmm.
I used to. I used to like to be by myself, and I'm kind of a loner. I think all of us internet type guys are, in fact, loners.
But I
trained myself to just never waste an opportunity, never eat a meal alone. And I work on building relationships. It's not about me telling people how great I am. It's about me learning how great they are.
Yeah.
And somebody once described it as the difference between the egotist walks in the room and says, "Here I am," and the empath walks in the room and says, "There you are."
Mm-hmm.
Well, who do you think people respond to more quickly?
Right. Not the self-centered one.
No. And so, for me, it's just finding people I can build a relationship with. I'm looking for those four or five people that I really connect with,
and
that I feel like we have some chemistry and that I have some ideas that could help. And then after the seminar, and there's a lot more to it in the product.
I think the simple thing that you are outlining is probably one of the most overlooked, underappreciated business getting strategies that there is.
Yep.
I mean, I'm picturing someone listening to this, an accountant, let's say, and they're saying to themselves, "Well, I offer free consultations on my website for the past 4 years, and I've gotten two."
Well,
you know, can you speak to the difference of the type of thing you're describing?
Yeah. The first thing is, if that's the case, then the way you're offering the consultation on your website, something's wrong with it. The copy, the positioning, the way you're talking about the offer.
Yeah.
But more powerfully, when you have a connection with people and they've met you, your persuasion power is multiplied. It's not incrementally increased, it's multiplied. There's a reason why presidential candidates spend so much time on the road shaking hands and kissing babies. They literally still do that. Why? Because it's been proven scientifically that if you have physical contact with a political candidate, you are much more likely to vote for that candidate. And it has nothing to do with your political ideology. It has to do with the fact that I met that guy.
Yeah.
And so that's a principle that's at work here as well. And if you give the sense to people that you really care about them and that you are trying to serve them and not trying to sell them, then ironically, they're much more likely to buy from you because now they're not on guard. They're not thinking, "Oh, I'm just going to get a sales pitch."
And that's way easier to do when you're actually in front of them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why when I meet people, I do my best to give them my best ideas right up front. You know, a lot of folks will say, "Well, don't give them your best stuff. Just get them on the consultation and then try to sell them on a package."
Yeah.
No, I give them my best idea right out of the gate. And I sincerely mean this. I tell them, I say, "You know, I get paid to do this, but let me just tell you what you should do, in my opinion. And I think it'll work for you. And if we never do business, I wish you all the best. And if you have a question about this, you just call me and let me know, and I'll do my best to answer it." And then the other part, I said there's things that you do before, during, and after.
Mm-hmm.
So after the seminar, here's the key thing. You just follow up with people. And you don't follow up, again, with a sales pitch. I follow up with, like, a handwritten note that just says something like, "Hey, it was great to meet you. I hope you have, you know, good fortune with that promotion that we talked about." Or I will, if I got a picture of me and the person together, I have a send out cards account. And I don't, you know, most people know that's a multi-level company. I don't do the multi-level part of it. I love the product.
Yeah.
Because I can upload a picture and turn it into a card, and they will send it through the, I don't ever touch the card. They send it automatically. So I can get a picture of me and somebody together. And imagine that you open a card, you get in your mailbox, and it's like a greeting card, and on the front of it is a picture of you and a person that you met. And inside is a note that says, "Hey, Jason, it was great to meet you at Yannick Silver's seminar, and I love the conversation that we had, and I hope we can reconnect soon. Here's my phone number. Let's talk."
Yeah.
I mean, that's impactful. And then oftentimes, I'll make a real connection, a deep connection with somebody, and there'll be a book or something that comes to mind for me that I think is appropriate for them, and I'll just send them the book.
Yeah. Low volume, high impact approach.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
that's key, because, I mean, the fact is, as a service provider, you have a limited number of people you can work with any one given time. So my philosophy is find the most likely candidates to fill those positions on your schedule and pour yourself into them, and you'll have more business than you can handle.
So that let's go back to your early days at $750 a sales letter. That is no longer your current reality. Can you talk to me about how, in fact, I mean, the fees that you talk about and publish are probably well beyond most people's reality. Can you talk about the art of fee setting, how that evolved for you, and what is the primary driver behind knowing how to set your fees?
Well-worded question. Okay, so the first lesson I got in this area was actually from Mike Littman. Because after I wrote those first two sales letters for him at $750, I realized, I did a little research, and I realized I was grossly underpriced. And so he called me back, and he wanted to order two more sales letters. And I said, you know, Mike, I've done a little checking, and I guess my rates are a little low, so I'm going to need to increase my rates. And he said, yeah, okay. And I stumbled and stammered around, and finally he says, in kind of an abrupt sort of way, he said, well, I won't use the colorful epithet that he used, but he finally said, just spit it out and tell me, how much is it going to cost? And I said, $2,000. And what I meant was, for both of them. And what he said was, okay, so $2,000 each, that'll be $4,000. And how do you want me to pay you? And I was almost speechless.
Wow.
And so he taught me the principle of asking for more than you're comfortable asking for and do it with confidence. And, you know, since that experience, I read this great quote from Dan Kennedy, who said that the key to getting high fees is being able to say the number and keep a straight face. And I have found that to be absolutely true. The second big lesson that I got, I was at this point in time, I was charging $7,500 for a sales letter.
Okay.
And I got a call from a well-known internet marketer who had been referred to me by another well-known internet marketer. And the guy who referred this person to me was also a friend of mine, and I didn't want to tell his buddy no. So I thought, how can I tell him that it's November and the holidays are coming up and I just don't want to work until after the first of the year?
Mm-hmm.
So I came up with this brilliant idea. I will quote him a number so outrageously high that he'll have to say no. So he tells me his whole story about his project, and he says, so how much would you charge? And I said, I remember my highest fee that I'd ever collected at that point was $7,500 for a sales letter. I said, well, it's $15,000 payable up front. And he said, how would you like that payment?
That's funny.
And so I suddenly changed my opinion about working during the holiday. And I had to learn the lesson one more time, though. And it was the exact same scenario. It was a couple of years later. And I had somebody call me about a project that I didn't want to work on. And I thought, okay, I'm going to tell him it's $30,000. And he'll say no. And we'll still be buddies and everything will be fine. And I told him it was $30,000. And this is where I learned another lesson. And it's about understanding the value of what you do. Because I said it's $30,000. And he starts tapping on a calculator. I can hear him tapping on the phone. And he's speaking out loud as he's doing it. And he says, okay, so we anticipate we're going to make $3 million gross, and we've got to pay the JV partners this much. And I was lost after he said $3 million because I realized, okay, he's going to make $3 million. I'm asking for $30,000, and I think it's a big deal.
Yeah. Wow.
And so I've just learned that the key to setting your fees is really understanding the value of what you bring to the table for your client. And the key to understanding that, by the way, is to really understand what will it cost them to not have what you offer.
Hmm. Talk more about that.
Well, so let's stay with the example that I was just discussing. This person was anticipating making $3 million with his promotion, with the product launch. What would happen if he had substandard sales copy for that product launch and it didn't deliver the $3 million? What if it didn't deliver half that much? What if he actually lost money? He would lose the $3 million and he had to pay out other vendors and joint venture partners and so forth. So, I mean, it could have cost him the entire $3 million to not have my services. So that makes my asking for $30,000 seem a little underpriced. Subsequently, I raised my prices again. But it's really, here's the funny thing. To really understand what it will cost people to not have your services, whatever service you offer, you have to first understand their business and their needs and their potential for profit and what the possible pitfalls and barriers to that profit might be. In other words, you have to deeply care about their business in order to understand it at that level.
Yeah.
And once you do, then you appreciate the value of what you bring to the table. So the irony is, the best way to get paid outrageously high fees is to really care about and understand your customers.
So let me ask you a question now, because I'm going to step into the shoes of my small self, having just heard from you, a well-known, you know, very successful guy in my field, and now I'm going to try to go out and charge kind of more along the value of what I'm worth in the first, or what the work is worth. And the first hill that I get to is one of this little voice in my head saying, well, there's no way I know if he's going to make that $3 million, right? And so now I feel like I'm on the hook for doing things that, as we all know, I ultimately don't control. How do you deal with those little voices in your head?
Well, I have those little voices. And I've had a couple of situations where I got into a relationship with a client and realized they weren't going to follow through.
Uh-huh.
And it's tough. And what it did for me was it taught me it's better to do a deeper diagnosis before giving the prescription.
Yeah.
And so what happens, you know, typically is, for me, I'll get a call from some marketer or somebody who wants to hire a copywriter, and they'll say, I'm doing a product launch and it's going to make $5 million and I need the best copywriter I can hire. And I heard you're that guy. So how much is it? And so there's a red flag immediately. But my answer to that question is, I have no idea.
I like that answer.
And then I shut up. And they eventually will recover and they'll say, what do you mean you have no idea? And I'll say, well, I don't really know you. I don't know your product. I don't know what your plans are. I don't know what your timeline is. I don't know what your costs are. I don't know what your margins are. I don't know who your joint venture partners are. There's no way I could tell you how much. So how about we start with, what are you trying to accomplish? And let's just talk about you and your business and what you're trying to do, and we'll figure out if I can even help you.
Yeah. And in my experience, that kind of approach is the quickest way in the world to generate instant respect with somebody. Would you say that's been your experience?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the person who responds negatively to that approach, who says, I don't want to do all that crap, just give me the number, that's the person to whom you need to say, I don't think this is going to work between you and I because we have different philosophies. I wish you all the best, but I'm not available to work on this project.
Yeah. So at the end of the day, I mean, at some level, all of this kind of lives or dies by how you believe in you and like what you do. And it's funny is, you know, as I've worked with more service providers over the years, it's like the things we think are hard, like how well do I do what I do or how do I market? Like those are not ending up being the obstacle. The obstacle is so many people don't believe in their value. Is that something that you just came onto this earth with that allows you to do what you do, or is that something that you developed? How did that process work for you?
Well, it is a process, which means I haven't arrived. I have I think for service providers, and particularly creative service providers, which honestly I think is all service providers, even if you're an accountant, there's creativity and there's a kind of intellectual brain fire that's involved in what you're doing.
Yeah.
And I think that for each of us who does this kind of work, this thinking sort of work, thinking is hard work, but it's also the highest paying work when you do it correctly. And so we have this thought product that we create, whatever it is, for each service provider. And I think that most of us hold two simultaneous opposite beliefs about our work product. On the one hand, we think it's the most brilliantly heartbreaking work of genius that's ever been created. And on the other hand, we think it's the most horrible, humiliating piece of crap we've ever produced.
Are you reading my diary, Ray?
And we're all afraid, desperately afraid, that one day it's going to be made public what a complete and total fraud we are.
Hmm.
And that is a fear that is, I think it's basic to human psychology and physiology. I think it goes way back. It's in our DNA. It comes from, that if I can just go deep dive on this for just 60 seconds, I think it comes from our past and our ancestors and history, in that we have these escalating fears. We have a fear of, at the base, like wired into us, is a fear of rejection.
Yeah.
By the tribe, embarrassment, conflict with other members of the tribe, and at the top of the scale is we're afraid of physical violence. And you know, we don't think of it that way. We don't think if the client doesn't like my work, they're going to come beat me up. But I think that's sort of built into our psychology. So how did I overcome that? And I have to a great degree, but I still wrestle with it. I still wrestle with those feelings every now and then. And for me, I'm not trying to tell anybody else what they have to believe, but for me, that has been a process that was accelerated and enhanced by getting clear about what my spiritual beliefs were.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a follower of Jesus, and I believe that I have an identity that doesn't flow from me and my own self-worth, but the worth that he gives me. And for other people, you may think of it in terms of maybe it's, you know, you think of your creator or your divine nature, or however you may word it or phrase it. But I think it comes down to God doesn't create junk. And I believe that he makes each person with a unique design, and that we all have a mission and we all have value inherent at the core of our being. And I know that sounds lofty, but when you can start experiencing that on a daily basis, you take time to connect with that, it changes the way you think about your work. I mean, I literally, people ask me, why do you do what you do? And I tell them, well, because I'm on a mission from God. I'm on a mission from God to help people build their businesses, which creates wealth and prosperity in the world, which makes life better for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about what that looks like. In the work that I do, in the last couple months, been using the word platform a lot. And I think from seeing what I see with you, that's a word you've been thinking about a lot. And I've watched you from the outside to see how what you're doing is changing over the years. And you're becoming, for just in my own words, it seems like you're becoming more of who Ray Edwards is in the marketplace than he ever was before. Can you talk about that evolution of things? Because it's striking in its uniqueness, and it must be fulfilling on your side to be out there doing what you do in the unique package that you think you're meant to do it.
Yeah, and I so appreciate you giving me the opportunity to talk about that for a brief moment, because that was a huge turning point for me. The two things were happening simultaneously. One, I was coming into a deeper awareness of what really is important to me and what I really believe spiritually. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, what is the meaning of my life? You know, a lot of guys and ladies go through it, especially in their 40s, when they start realizing, there's this thing called the clock that's running on how long I get to spend on this rock we call the earth. And it might be good if I figured out what the heck I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And so I had that realization happen. And then I began to try to figure out, well, how do I integrate that with my business? And I was, it's a funny story. I was part of a high-priced mastermind group. And I would go to these meetings three times a year, and in the room were all these you know, people who their businesses, in many cases, were making multiple millions of dollars per year, and they're well known. And I was getting advice from those people. They were, you know, my peers and my mentors. And so I go to this meeting a couple of years back, and I said, guys, here's what's happening. I've had a spiritual awakening. I've come back to a deep faith in Jesus Christ, and I feel like that is an integral part of what I am called to do with my business as well. And I just don't feel like I can separate the two things anymore. And I'm just going to, for lack of a better term, I'm going to come out, and I'm just going to be who I am.
Yeah.
What do you guys think? And overwhelmingly, the response I got was, don't do that. Don't. You're crazy.
Oh,
you don't mix religion and business. And I know they thought they were persuading me in a direction, and they were, but it just wasn't the direction that they felt, because it made me so angry that I decided, you know what, to heck with that. That just strengthens my resolve. I'm going to be who I am, and people are either going to love me or hate me, but there's not going to be any doubt about who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And that was so freeing for me, because I found, to my surprise, that in the past I had been modulating my behavior and my words based on the reaction that I wanted people to have to me.
Yeah.
And I had really like created this, I won't say a false persona, but I will say an incomplete picture of who I really was. And that's what I showed to the world. Well, I don't know if you realize it, but that gets stressful after a while. You kind of got to figure out
tons of examples of that. And when it breaks down, yeah.
Yes, indeed, for sure. So it's been, it was an interesting experience. I wrote a big blog post that kind of unveiled the quote new me, which really was more like the real me. And I had responses on all points of the spectrum, but mostly they were either love me or hate me. And people ask me, they say, well, what did that do to your business?
Mm-hmm.
Well, at first, there was a decrease in business, but very quickly, and this is the takeaway for anybody who's resonating with this, who's listening, saying, man, I wish I could do that. I would urge you to do it, because here's what happened for me, and this is what I believe will happen for you as well. You will begin to attract people who are looking for someone like you. And that is your tribe. And those are the people who you serve. And other people, it's not that you don't care about them or you don't like them, but they're just not who you're meant to be serving. And then you find, wow, all my customers, we share a common core set of values, and we get along, and you discover that, like for me, all my clients are also friends.
Yeah.
That I'm at ease with, and I love working with, and I don't feel this weird pressure from. So
well,
that's where it's led me.
I could look at what you do and almost say that it is an elevated form of serving before they even become your client, to have the guts to go out there and be who you are enough that it makes their decision easier to make about, is Ray right
good.
For me or is Ray wrong for me? So, I mean, I think there are a lot of people on the line that probably are scared to do that fully, whatever that thing may be for them. But in terms of like stepping back and looking at it from a business savvy perspective, is there a better way to attract the right clients for you than to be clear like that?
That's a really good point. I'm going to use that.
I'll send you the recording. I'll send you the recording, but that's awesome. So, I mean, that leads me now, I wish you would just, let's see. There are a lot of varied service providers on the line. If there's one thing that you could tell them that you wish you had known back during your Warrior Forum days about what it means to be in the business of service, what's something that would come to mind?
however you serve people, dive deeper into the act of service. And let me put shoes on that because that sounds a little vague. I do a weekly podcast, weekly radio show. And when I started doing it, it was actually kind of a lark. I just started doing it. And then I began to realize, well, this is a service to some people. So how can I do it better? How can I do it deeper? I have spent thousands of dollars on equipment. I have hired a coach. I used to be in radio, so I thought I knew a thing or two. And then I realized, you know, when you're in radio, you have a program director who coaches you on how to be better at being you. So I hired a coach, a professional radio program director from a major U.S. radio market. I've upped the level of production. We have custom written music for the podcast. I write a complete script every week. I've poured a lot into something that has yet to make me a dollar directly.
Yeah.
However, I did it because I wanted to serve people better. I thought there are people who will never hire me as a copywriter, never hire me as a marketing consultant. Maybe will never buy one of my products or come to a workshop, but they deserve the best I can give them in terms of my help. So I feel like, you know, my blog and my podcast are those two areas. But well, by pouring yourself into a deeper level of service, always asking how you can add more value at every level, even at the free level, even at the, like you were just talking about, well, how do you position yourself? Is there a way I can add value through my marketing?
Yeah.
Can my marketing itself be valuable to people? If you will own who you are and believe in who you are and believe in what you do, and if you can't, if you're doing something that you say, well, I just can't really believe in it, well, for heaven's sakes, go do something else. Do the thing that sets your hair on fire.
Yeah.
Do the thing that you can't. Jason, I feel so lucky because I literally wake up at 4:30 or 5 a.m. each day, and I cannot wait to get out of bed and go do what I do.
How many people can say that?
I don't know, but it should be more, however many it is.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I really want to thank you for taking the time to do this and to spread what is really, I mean, I think the message at the core, which you hit the nail on over and over again. So for people that want to take a step towards, you know, closer towards Ray Edwards, what are you up to these days? Where can they go? What do you have going on?
Well, I would just point you to rayedwards.com, where you can find most all things that are on my radar screen currently. I have a blog. I post pretty frequently to the blog. I have a weekly podcast. We have some products and services that we offer, and you can read about those on the website, but that would be where I would point you.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you again, and it's been great.
my privilege.
All right. Take care.